Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for September 30th, 2014. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm talking to Amnon Altman about how a guanine nucleotide exchange factor called SLAT promotes calcium signaling in T cells. Foreign molecules like proteins or carbohydrates from the surface of bacteria stimulate T cells to help fight the infection. Binding of antigens to the T cell receptor is the first step in this process, and it leads to the activation and differentiation of T cells that are sensitive to that particular antigen. There are a lot of signaling events that connect stimulation of the T cell receptor to T cell activation, but one of the key events is a rise in intracellular calcium. Activation of the T cell receptor, or TCR, causes calcium to be released from internal stores in the endoplasmic reticulum. This released calcium then causes calcium channels located on the plasma membrane to open so that more calcium flows into the cell. The result is a sustained rise in intracellular calcium, and this, in combination with other signals, triggers T cell activation, proliferation, and differentiation. A new study from Amnon Altman's group has investigated how a guanine nucleotide exchange factor called SLAT promotes the release of calcium from the endoplasmic reticulum downstream of TCR activation. Altman spoke to me from the La Jolla Institute for Allergy and Immunology in La Jolla, California. Hi, Dr. Altman. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you very much.
How does TCR-triggered calcium release promote T-cell activation and differentiation?
The increase in intracellular concentration of calcium activates many enzymes, including an enzyme called calcineurin, which removes phosphate residues from an inactive transcription factor called NFAT, which normally resides in the cell cytoplasm under resting condition. And this dephosphorylation event causes NFAT to move to the cell nucleus, where it acts together with other transcription factors to activate many genes that promote the activation and differentiation of T cells.
Since it's the rise in intracellular calcium that triggers T cell differentiation and T cell activation, can you artificially trigger T cell activation by just experimentally raising the calcium inside the cell?
Yes, actually, you can do that. There are several experimental tricks that allow us to mimic the T cell receptor signal leading to the increase in intracellular calcium concentration. The most common of these is a group of compounds called calcium ionophores, which, when applied to the T cell, will artificially increase intracellular calcium concentration. And this will trigger some of the events associated with T cell activation, but by itself would not induce a full T-cell activation, namely proliferation or differentiation, because this would require additional signals.
It's a sustained rise in intracellular calcium that triggers T-cell activation, and that calcium comes into the cell through channels that are on the plasma membrane. But that inrush of calcium is induced by an earlier release of calcium from the endoplasmic reticulum. How does T-cell activation trigger that initial release of calcium from the endoplasmic reticulum?
So when a T-cell is stimulated by binding of an antigen to the T-cell receptor, an enzyme called phospholipase C gamma 1 is activated. And this activated enzyme then generates a small sugar called inositol 3-phosphate, which acts as a second messenger by binding to its specific receptor, which is the IP3 receptor. And the IP3 receptor itself is a calcium channel localized in the endoplasmic reticulum. So when IP3 binds to its receptor, that leads to opening and activation of the IP3 receptor, and calcium can then flow from inside the endoplasmic reticulum to the cytoplasm. And our findings indicate that SLAT promotes this process when it binds to the IP3 receptor.
In this current study, you looked at how that protein SLAT binds to the IP3 receptor. How does it interact with it?
So in the work that was led by Dr. Camille Faux, a postdoctoral fellow working in my lab, we found that when antigen binds to the T-cell receptor, SLAT then directly binds to the IP3 receptor via two functional regions or domains. And we have actually mapped these regions that are required for the binding to the IP3 receptor. And in fact, when these two domains are deleted from SLAT, it cannot bind anymore the IP3 receptor, and therefore it loses its ability to enhance calcium release from the endoplasmic reticulum.
In the absence of SLAT, then, the IP3 receptor can still be activated, but not as much as if SLAT were present.
That is probably correct, yes. In mouse T cells that lack SLAT, we can still see some calcium response, but it's substantially weaker than the one that we would normally see in the presence of SLAT.
Do you know how SLAT changes the activity of the IP3 receptor?
So we don't have the precise answer to this question, and actually this is the subject of ongoing and future studies. So at present, we can only speculate and propose a number of potential mechanisms. And one hypothetical model that we particularly like is based on our finding that SLAT binds directly IP3, which is actually something that we didn't include in the paper to be published. With this finding, we hypothesized that binding of IP3 to SLAT on one hand, combined with the binding of SLAT to the IP3 receptor on the other hand, would create a highly local concentration of IP3 in the vicinity of the receptor, and that would increase the efficiency of IP3 receptor channel activation and opening. But definitely other mechanisms of action, for example, competition between SLAT and some inhibitory protein for binding to the IP3 receptor are plausible as well. But obviously we would need to do much more work to resolve the precise mechanism.
How important is the ability of SLAT to bind the IP3 receptor in T cell activation? So you said that in cells that lack SLAT, that the calcium release from the ER is reduced.
That's correct.
Does that totally block T cell activation, or does it just reduce it?
It doesn't completely block, because we found that if we use some experimental trick to block the interaction between SLAT and the IP3 receptor in primary T cells from mice, and we found that this manipulation inhibits but doesn't totally block T cell activation. It also depends on which T cell activation event you're looking at. If you're looking, for example, in the activation of the transcription factor NFAT, which is an important transcription factor that's activated by calcium, that is blocked almost completely. If you look at our later events, for example, production of cytokines such as interferon gamma, that is inhibited by about 50% to 70%, but not completely blocked.
Is the activity of SLAT regulated by T cell receptor signaling, or is SLAT just ready to bind the IP3R and assist it in calcium release when it's activated?
Right. So in fact, SLAT is regulated by signals from the T cell receptor, because in an earlier study on SLAT, which we published in 2008, we found that stimulation of the T cell receptor causes SLAT to become phosphorylated on two tyrosine residues, and we actually mapped these two tyrosine residues. And what we assume is that this phosphorylation event most likely causes some sort of a conformational change in SLAT, and this conformational change exposes the two domains that are required for binding the IP3 receptor, and that would therefore allow SLAT to bind to the IP3 receptor. But it is also important to note that SLAT is also a so-called guanine nucleotide exchange factor, namely an enzyme that can activate small G proteins such as RAC1 or CDC42. And we believe that the tyrosine phosphorylation of SLAT also exposes its catalytic region, which is distinct from the two IP3 receptor binding domains. And the resulting activation of this small G protein is also critical for T cell activation. So promotion of calcium signaling is not the only mechanism by which SLAT enhances T cell activation.
So you mentioned that if you block the interaction between SLAT and the IP3 receptor, you reduce the calcium that's released from the ER and reduce T cell activation.
Right.
Is there any sort of practical application for that clinically?
Well, yes, potentially there is, because what we used in our study is cell-permeable peptides based on the sequence in the IP3 receptor that binds SLAT, and we showed that if we introduce these peptides into T cells, they would disrupt the interaction between SLAT and IP3 receptor. So potentially any manipulation that would disrupt the interaction between SLAT and the IP3 receptor would be very useful for blocking calcium signaling in T cells. And the nice thing about this approach is that SLAT is expressed almost exclusively only in T cells. So disruption of this interaction would have potentially minimal side effects because it wouldn't interfere with calcium signaling pathways in other cell types. And in fact, we showed earlier on that mice that lack SLAT are resistant to autoimmune diseases as well to allergic lung inflammation. Of course, using peptides as drugs is not that straightforward and has various issues, but one could potentially think about small compounds that would mimic these peptides, and this will disrupt the interaction between SLAT and the IP3 receptor.
Dr. Altman, thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you very much, Annalisa.
That was Amnon Altman discussing a paper published in the September 30th issue of Science Signaling by Foss and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.